And we're in the section that goes from 38 to 41, already 42. But I want to go back. We covered that last week, but I want to go back and just look at one verse, verse 41. Jesus is trying to convey to us that our rights, we talked about eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, and he that smites thee on the right cheek, that if you got hit on the right cheek, that's more of a challenge to your pride instead of an attack to your person. And being sued at law, that you just go beyond. You swallow your pride, humble yourself, and know that God is allowing these things to happen for a reason, and use them as an opportunity to be a blessing instead of a pain in the side. And we're going to note verse 41 and set the background for you, and then try to bring it up to the year 2020. It says there, in verse 41 of chapter 5, and whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. That little word go with him twain, it's an imperative, which means it's a command. What the Lord is telling us here is not a suggestion. It's not, why don't you consider this? But it is a direct command. And as I said last week, and I'll say again, Israel was inhabited by the Roman government. Actually, Rome brought peace to the world that it was occupying, but it also brought conformity, and they ruled with a power. And one of the rules that they had was a soldier or an official of the Roman government had the right to compel someone to bear his load for 1 mile. The word mile, if you're going in the metric term, you know, millimeter, a mile comes from that, and the word mile actually in this time period was 1,000 paces of a pretty big stride, but like 5 feet. And so it actually was 1,618 yards, a little longer than our English mile. For a Jew to be compelled to pack a Roman's load wasn't very it wasn't accepted very well. They were the enemy. They occupied their country. They're forcing them to do forced labor. They are taxing them, and it was hated. It was resisted. We have an example of someone packing, being compelled, and remember that they compelled Simon of Cyrene to bear the cross of Jesus. And so the Jews hated this conscription. Some Jews would walk 1,000 steps down the road both ways from their house and drive a stake in the ground. And they knew exactly when they'd come there, and they'd dump the load off and return back to what they were doing. But here Jesus gives and says something very revolutionary. And he says, whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. go 2 miles. And I want you to note the wording here. It's not whatsoever Roman soldier compels thee to go a mile, go with him twain. But it says whosoever. And so that's that teaching here is not just stuck in the first century. That we can be obligated even today, and it may be your job, it may be you have an obligation to your neighbor, and perhaps a church member or a co-worker, as we said, and it asks us to go beyond what's expected. And so let me talk about that a little bit today. I've become more and more convicted about this for a number of months. And we'll get into that as we go along. The first thing I want to say is, number one, is before you can go the second mile, you must go the first mile. Now that's a brilliant statement, isn't it? Before you can go mile two, you need to go mile one. The first mile speaks of obligations, ordinary things. But the second mile speaks of opportunities to show our love for people. And certainly that's what Jesus is teaching here. The first mile is required. They were obligated to walk it. There's no spatial honor in the first mile. It's your duty. Fulfilling that task of going the first mile, nobody notices it. Just do your job and shut up. It's an obligation. Everybody had to do this. And this may sound a little bit strange, but it's very tempting for you and I to want to leapfrog to the second mile without doing the first mile. Because the second mile receives notice. The second mile is observed by others, that he's going beyond what we expected. He's doing the extraordinary. And you see, a lot of times, particularly in Christianity and work in relationship to a church, people want to do that which is noticed, because then they get recognition. But it's the wrong recognition. The Lord recognizes those who do their duty, the first mile, to do their obligation, to do that which is not outstanding. It's just everyday work. And whether that's within the church, you know, or within the home, mothers taking care of children. How many fathers can go home with their mother having, their wife having a newborn baby and ask, how many diapers did you change today? I want to give you a reward for doing that. No, it's just their duty. And nobody recognizes that. But the Lord wants us to be faithful. He wants us to keep on keeping on. And we need to watch out wanting the recognition of the extraordinary. They want to do the second mile because it's noticed. But the first mile is not so much noticed. A famous orchestra conductor, Leonard Bernstein, was asked, what is the most difficult instrument to play? And he replied, second fiddle. I can get plenty of first violinists, but to find one who plays second violin with as much enthusiasm or second French horn or second flute, that's a problem. And yet if no one plays second, we have no harmony. And so, be faithful to what your responsibility is. And the second mile really is not going to be there until we go the first mile. The second mile also, it requires... It requires conquering something within. It's not easy to go the second mile. It requires conquering something within. Just imagine if this soldier is packing a big pack and it's 50 pounds and you pack it that 1 mile and then to go another mile, it's just something grates against that in our lives. It's such an incredible concept that it challenges the very core of our being, of our Christianity. But you see, God never intended for his children to be mediocre. He never intended for his children to just be the status quo. He wants his children to excel in serving. And so Christianity has never been about doing enough to get by. Never has. And we can come and go to church and live our lives out as Christians, and we do what's expected of us. You know, I know that the church expects me to do this, and so we do that what's expected of us. And the Lord here is saying, I want you to do more than is expected of you. And in fact, we may see a verse here, yeah, we will, shortly, that really hammers that home. Christianity is not about being average. It was the right of the Jewish citizen to dump the load after a mile. But Christianity is about giving up your rights. Look over there in Luke chapter 17. Luke 17 and verse 7. But which of you, having a servant plowing or feeding cattle, will say to him by and by, when he has come from the field, go and sit down to meat? This guy is your servant. You're paying him. And will not rather say unto him, make ready wherewith I may sup, and gird thyself, and serve me, till I have eaten and drunken, and afterward thou shalt eat and drink. And so he says, you know, go fix supper, and I'll take my supper, and then you can eat. Doth he thank that servant because he did the things that were commanded him? I trow not, I think not. So likewise, ye, when ye shall have done all those things which are commanded you, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done that which was our duty to do. And so he's trying to drive home a teaching that we would go beyond what our duty is. You all know that if you need a job and you go and take that job and you always do a little bit more than what's required of you, they'll probably keep you around. Well, the Lord's simply saying that whether you're getting paid for it or not, you know, on an everyday basis, we ought to go the second mile. Christ said, for scarcely for a righteous man will one die. Yet peradventure for a good man some would even dare to die. But God commendeth his love towards us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. There was no reward. There was no benefit. This was not going to benefit me. When that guy went the second mile, there was no benefit for him. The soldier wasn't going to give him something out of his pocket. There was no tip coming. And it says of Jesus, him being found in the fashion of man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Not just death, but the death of the cross. And so, to go the second mile requires conquering something within us, our pride. To realize that we've been bought with a price and we're not our own. That we belong to another. And the one we belong to said, listen, go the second mile. Something else I would add about this second mile is that it seems as though the second mile never ends. There's not another stake driven in the ground beyond the first stake a mile down the road. It never ended. And in reality, you know, we could say, okay, I went the first mile, and now I did this much. I've swallowed my pride. I've devoted my time and energy this much, and then now I'm done. Well, thank the Lord that he didn't just go part way. There's no ending marker. If someone asks you, where are you at in your Christian life? You shouldn't say, I'm halfway or I'm three quarters. But you should say, I'm on the second mile. And that's where we live. We should live on that second mile. The Bible never says anything about a third mile. That second mile continues. There's no retirement from the second mile. We should always be pressing on for the mark. We should never cease in living the life of a second mile. And so where are you at? Where are you at in your Christian walk? Are you in the first mile, doing that which is your obligation to do? doing that which is your responsibility to do, doing that which is expected of you, or are we doing more that's expected? The Coast Guard was getting ready to go out and rescue a vessel on a very stormy sea, and the member of the crew asked the captain, or was very fearful, and said to the captain, "We're never going to get back." And the captain says, "Our orders aren't to come back, but only to go." And so, what I'm saying that is this, is that if we're going to be second milers, you're going to have to get over, what am I going to get out of this? What we get out of it is a privilege of serving the Lord. Because the second mile is for Him. And I might as well jump in here with what I've been thinking. But I think there's been a tendency in at least my life, and I think in among independent Baptists, not maybe as a whole, but we can fall into this, is that we're to earnestly contend for the faith that was once delivered to the saints, that we're to live separated lives, that we're to evangelize and disciple and if we're not careful, our community and the members of our community can be seen as numbers that build the church. And there's an old saying that you've heard before, but it goes like this. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And maybe more lives, more opportunities, more people would be open to what we want to share concerning Jesus Christ if we first were willing to go a second mile. I was talking to Brother McIntyre when he was here about his evangelism, and he was saying, you know, since he's been there, that they've knocked the whole town of Freeport, the doors, at least three times in the years that he's been there. But one of the things they're doing now is just, you know, non-conventional and maybe heresy in some circles. Once a week or once a month, they go to the Pioneer's home, and the ladies go and they paint the fingernails of the old ladies, and they talk to them and just share with them. That he is part of he's like a chaplain for the police force in Freeport, and he says, "I just ride with this guy, and I've never ever really approached, you know, the gospel, but I've just showed him that I care. I reached out and opened myself up to him and tried to help him." And he said, an opportunity, you know, came. And it's a strange opportunity. I mean, he talked to this guy about some stuff. But here's how the opportunity came. This guy was, he had a dog that rode with him. He was, canine force. And the canine, the dog got sick and died. And so they had an honorary service for the dog because he was a police force member. And policemen from all around the area came to the service. And this man that he rode with, who was a canine officer, asked Brother McIntyre to speak at this at this honoring. And he said, it's pretty unusual, he said. But he got to share the gospel and talked about, you know, animals and creation. But it opened up a thing to do. And there's a concept of Christians that we are stuffy, that we are just trying to get them to come to our church so we can have their money. And we know that that's not true. But we also know that we don't really like to be bothered. And so the second mile, when we go the second mile, barriers, one of the things he said too that happens, and this could only, barriers are broken. And this could probably only happen in Texas, but in Texas when a student is acting up in the public school, they have a special school, they won't just expel them, but they have a special school that they go to. And the requirements are stricter, and they're put underneath closer observation. But for 30 minutes every week, it may have been an hour every week, but at least 30 minutes every week, someone from the community, anyone from the community can come in and have some conversations with a student. And when you come in, you can share anything you want to share. And so he said, I'm going in, and I'm talking about the Lord. Well, opportunities to go to second mile, to do things. The second mile breaks down barriers. So here we have, and I mentioned this last week, here we have this soldier. He grabs this guy, walks by his house that's next to the road, and he said, hey, come on out here. I want you to pack this. You got to go a mile. You know what you got to do. And so the guy puts it on his back, and he starts down the road, and he comes to the stake in the ground, and he keeps walking. And the soldier said, oh, he missed the stake. I'll just let him keep packing. Or he says that he couldn't count to 1,000. And it may have kept him going on. And the soldier is wondering, what's going on? You know, what's this guy doing? What's he up to? What's your problem? You don't act like a regular Christian. One of those guys that goody two shoes that go to church and preach the gospel all the time. What's the deal here? What, you know, it's the idea of the New Guinea natives were fattening him up for the kill. He's probably worried. But it opens up some conversation. A woman once approached a certain lawyer about a divorce, and she could say nothing good about her husband, for he wasn't the same as he once was, she said. The lawyer told her to go home and wait upon him hand and foot. This is where you elbow your wives. Wait upon him hand and foot for a month. And she was to arise early in the morning, prepare his favorite food for breakfast, doll herself up, and do everything to make him happy. And then after 30 days, she was to leave him and file for the divorce. When she returned from 30 days later, the lawyer asked if she was ready to file the divorce papers. Her reply was, divorce? Why, that man's the greatest man in all the world. The lawyer's advice might be good for us to consider in the Christian life. Well, as a little rabbit trail here, and my wife is in the other building, so I can safely say this. One of the best places you can go to second mile is in your home. And it is more blessed to give than receive. And just think of the changes that would take place in a home if you went beyond what your supposed duty was. If each would go the second mile. And so let me again say that Christianity is not a mediocre religion. It's not about just doing enough to get by. It's not about being average. It's about excelling. And then the second mile, you might be surprised, but the second mile is going to open up opportunities. To witness. When they find out that there's not some ulterior motive behind what you're doing, then they're going to say, what makes you do what you're doing? And you can share with them, well, normally, in my natural self, I'm very selfish. But there's been a change in my life. Look in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 44. Going the second mile is not normal, as we've said. It's considered weird. It's not motivated out of self. To go the second mile, what would motivate a person to go the second mile? Well, verse 44 tells us, "But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you." I preached at prison the other night, and there's talking about husbands loving your wives, and there's actually storge. Is a Greek word, it's translated love, and that's love for family. Phileo, that's love for brothers, friends. Eros is not only sexual love, but eros is a, you can say, when you say, "I love that chocolate cake," is you love it because it does something to you and for you. And a sexual eros also has that meaning. And much of love is what I get out of it. But the great love, as you know, is agape. And that's a love. When he says love your enemies here, I can say to Brother Wilson, I want you to be sad right now, as sad as you were when your parents died. Well, you can't demand emotion. And so when he says here in this passage to love your enemies, he's not saying that somehow we can build up some kind of excitement and emotion in us that we're going to be so happy to be around our enemies. No, it's a decision of the will. From 1 Corinthians 13, love is long-suffering, patient, kind. And I'm going to be determined to be patient with this guy. I'm going to be long-suffering with this guy. I'm going to be kind with this guy. And so when he says for us to love our enemies, he's saying that you can make some decisions about that. And it's going to require, of course, that we go, it's beyond us. Philippians 4:13 says, I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me. If we're going to be salt and light, then we need to go the second mile. Now, I want you to note a number of passages where the Bible does speak about good works. In Ephesians chapter 2, here's what happens, is that we are so right and correct to say that good works have no merit. And that statement is only half true. It has no merit as far as obtaining salvation, but it's only half true. Look at Ephesians 2, 8 and 9. Ephesians 2, 8 and 9. For by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It's a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. And so salvation is solely by God's work in our lives, by grace. But he goes on and says, for we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus. His workmanship, his masterpiece, his great painting, the great painting of Rembrandt, the workmanship. God is trying to make something beautiful out of us. Created in Christ Jesus unto good works, which God hath before ordained that we should walk in them. That he says here in this passage that God has he's ordained, he's designed, his purpose, his plan for our lives is that we might live lives that would be exemplified by being identified that he is a good man. He's a good person. He does good. That he's a blessing wherever he goes. And that it's our responsibility to get with it. Because again, I think a lot of the lost world sees Christians only as someone that's trying to use them to build their church and get numbers, and there's actually people out there that have some tremendous needs. The last two times I've preached in prison, I've preached on the home. The first one was God's blueprint for couples. And the next one last week was God's blueprint for the husband. And you know what I've seen in the men's eyes as they know that there have been failures. And they're seeing that there's some needs and a desire to change. More than any other time I've preached in prison, they've been very attentive. And why is that? Because they feel like that somebody is trying to help them. And I'm just telling you that I think a lot of times when I've tried to share the gospel with people, they don't feel like I'm trying to help them at all. And that's part of just being lost. But it's sometimes how we come across. And the false gospel of easy believism has so corrupted things that it may be necessary before we can sow the seed and see if it brings forth you know, 100-fold or 80 or 60. Before we can sow the seed, we may have to plow some ground. Look over in James chapter 2. In James chapter 2 and verse 14, what is the profit, my brethren, though a man say he hath faith and hath not works, can faith save him? If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, depart in peace and be ye warmed and filled, notwithstanding ye give them not those things which are needful to the body, what doth it profit? Even so, if it hath not works, even so faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone. Yea, a man may say, thou hast faith, and I have works. Show me thy faith without thy works, and I'll show thee my faith by my works. Thou believest that there is one God, and thou doest well. The devils also believe and tremble. But wilt thou know, O vain man, that faith without works is dead? Well, what is, and you could go on, and there's still more there, but what he's saying is this. Not that faith, that works secures faith, but he's saying if you're genuinely saved, you ought to have some good works coming out of your life. Now, look in 1 Peter. And another very convicting verse, 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 12. Well, let's look in verse 11. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims. And so Peter is writing to a people who were persecuted and were scattered abroad. And they were living in a country where they were foreigners, where they were strangers. They weren't the most popular people in the population. And he says here, he said, dearly beloved, I beseech you, as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul. And then he says, having your conversation, that's not your speech, but your lifestyle, honest, among the Gentiles. Man, one of the worst things that a Christian can do is to be dishonest, to do half a job and charge for a full job, to say one thing but do another thing. Whereas they speak against you as evildoers, a Christian has to go the second mile. He's got to do everything he can to appear to be just and right and honest. And so he says, whereas they speak against you as evildoers, so we want to avoid that. But he also implies here in this verse that just being a Christian, you're going to be spoken of as an evil person. But he said that they, by your good works, which they shall behold. And so they'll see and say, well, how can a person be evil when he gives so much? How can a person be evil when he opens up his life so much to others? How can a person be evil when he goes the second mile? This doesn't, what you're telling me about this wicked Christian that says homosexuality is sin and shacking up is sin and all bad, 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 all he wants to talk about is the bad things. How can you tell me that he's a good person? Because I've observed his life and he goes the second mile. And then the most important thing, by your good works which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. That we become salt and light, and our Savior becomes glorified by our lives. That the Lord's children should not fall very far from the tree. You know, we talk of it in a funny way. Someone's grumpy or someone does weird stuff and their parents did the same thing. And you say, well, they didn't fall very far from the tree. Well, we shouldn't fall very far from our Father's tree. And so, how many of you really find it hard to witness in the workplace and in different places? I mean, what a Saturday. I was talking to Chris this morning. You know, where I grew up, it was many years ago, rural area. When you went someplace, when I was working as a fuel oil distributor and I wound up at a farmer's farm, and it was around noontime, it wasn't unusual for them to invite you in to eat. And we live in a day when electronics, the iPhones and the iPads, and out here in this area where everybody is on an acre and there's no really much interaction between people, that I think actually, though we have communication ability greater than we ever have since the beginning of time, people live in isolation more than ever before. And they don't think anybody cares for them. But Jesus Christ did die for them, and he does care for them. And somehow we're going to have to figure out, as his spokesman, to pass that message to them. I'm not saying, you know, friendship evangelism is one thing, and there's some things bad to be said about that. But I'm simply saying to you today, there may be some places and some times and some people will never, ever be able to preach the gospel, which is the power of God to salvation, until we have someone's ear to listen. And that may come by us going the second mile. And what is that going to require? It's going to require death to self. Let this mind be in you, as is in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, not a thought robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. I'm not asking and suggesting today something that the Lord hasn't already done. Okay? So we got to preach the gospel in every way possible. But sometimes it's more palatable when someone knows how much we care before we tell them how much we know.